Wake-Up Call on the SportsNet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, again, the Valentine's Day bumper music just continuing along this morning. Let's go to the Progressive guest line. Progressive Insurance, drivers who switch and save with Progressive save nearly $750 on average. Ryan Ballinger joins us, Golf News Net, to help us on a couple of things that are going on in the golf world. How are you, my friend?
Good, Tony. How are you?
Good. Let's start Genesis Invitational this week at Riviera. Tiger Woods is going to play. Last year, he withdrew from the Masters, but then didn't play in the other majors and kind of played with Charlie a little bit in a couple of tournaments. But what do you know about his game right now, if anything?
Not much more than what we saw in December at both of those tournaments, kind of back to back. I get the sense that really it all comes down to him two things. One, how much power can he generate from what has become a little bit more of an upper body swing, because his right leg is what it is, but also how well can he manage to walk a golf course for four consecutive days in a row, assuming he makes the cut this week, which should be pretty easy for him to do, but by no means a guarantee. Other than that, he just looked kind of rusty at the Hero World Challenge, like a guy who had not played competitive golf in a while, and he also seemed to be sweating a whole heck of a lot. So I don't know where he's at in terms of fitness and endurance, but you could tell he's put a lot of work into his upper body. There's led to some speculation about whether he's fully doing that on his own. And that's, I guess, up to other people to decide. But I get the sense that he's realized that if he's going to be able to hit the ball 300 yards, you know, at 48 years of age, he's going to have a strong upper body, have as strong of a left leg as he can, and a right leg that he can kind of post up on well enough to be able to execute the rest of his swing. We'll see how all that looks this week again.
I completely understand his competitiveness. It's one of the reasons that it made him who he is. But as he's gotten older, has he softened a little bit, or at least in your mind, has he softened a little bit on the ceremonial golfer? Because he's hosting this thing, and for the brand, people want to see him even if he doesn't make the cut or play particularly well.
Yeah, I think people will watch Tiger Woods play golf pretty much anywhere at any time. I mean, he's pretty much single-handedly revived the PNC Championship for that reason, an otherwise sleepy event in December that now millions of people will watch each year to see him and his son play golf together in a scramble of all things. So he's still the needle. He will probably be the needle until he's dead, to be honest with you. So I think he very much understands his place in the game now. I think he has a greater appreciation of it because, frankly, he's endangered his life enough times to have almost had that ripped away from him through, you know, reasons of his own doing. So I think he is very appreciative of what he accomplished, the reverence that people still have for that, and probably will have for that for the rest of his life. And he wants to play into that a little bit. And I think that has a hand in why he has been so active and is now a member of the PGA Tour Policy Board. He wants what he helped build, and what he sees is what he helped build, to continue how he kind of would like it to continue.
All right, let's talk about the tournament last week, the Waste Management Phoenix Open, and the controversy now of golfers saying, okay, it's now starting to cross the line a little bit. How long, as I may have been out of the loop on this. I feel like this just came to me, but for those who have really, really studied it, how long has this tournament been an issue? And how can they balance it so that it remains kind of a fun, unique atmosphere, but it doesn't cross the line where golfers say, I'm not going to play in that anymore?
Yeah, I think it depends on who you ask. Because, you know, for every video of Zach Johnson and Billy Horschel chirping at a fan who was talking during a swing, you'd have a Max Homa goes, yeah, there are lots of people there who say lots of dumb things, but I think it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
And I think it's jarring for someone who's never played in it because there's just so much noise. There's so much stuff you don't typically hear or see at a golf tournament, and you have to decide whether you want to engage with that mentally or just kind of block it out. And I think the players who handle this event best are the ones who can kind of block that out, or at least at a minimum have a little fun with it between shots. They had supposedly in the area of at least 300,000 people on site on Saturday. That is a frightening amount of people to be anywhere, much less at a golf tournament where the average expectation is you're supposed to be quiet and polite. I mean, it's just kind of the law of averages that the more people you invite somewhere, the less likely they're to follow the rules.
Right.
And if you want to have 300,000 people there on a Saturday, then the odds are increased that stuff like this is going to happen, where they're going to have to cut off alcohol sales, and they're going to have so many people that the Scottsdale Police Department has to say no more, and you can't sell them any booze. But at the same time, the tournament has this reputation for being an incredible party, being so much fun to go to. You're going to wind up getting people who go there not just because it's a golf tournament, but because it's an opportunity to booze it up with their friends. I don't know what the balancing point is. Sunday was fine. By all measures, Sunday seemed totally fine. It's more subdued. More people stay home to watch the Super Bowl. They're not going out to the golf course to venture out. It's a Saturday event, really. So if they could figure out how they better handle Saturdays, and maybe that's creating more areas on the property to kind of funnel people who really aren't there for the golf. Maybe you have a concert during the tournament. Maybe you do, and the Lyft people will be like, oh, we told you so. But maybe you do something like that where you try to funnel away the people from the golf that aren't there for golf and give them an activity to do in addition to drinking that isn't just going to interrupt the golfers and get them upset.
Is it a safety thing or is it an atmosphere thing that I think the golfers are concerned about? Because the atmosphere seems like 1 week out of the year you can go to a fun party golf tournament. And every other tournament is pretty standard, but this one is unique. But if it's a safety issue, meaning it's raining beer cans when I'm trying to putt on 16, that would be concerning to me.
I don't interpret it as a safety issue. I mean, to a degree, yes. There are people who are getting arrested or trespassed or thrown out. And there was an increase of that and notable increase of that this year compared to last year and 2 years ago. To be fair, 2 years ago, we were just getting out of COVID and there probably weren't as many people there. So I think for the players, more than anything else, it's players getting interrupted by fans who are heckling them, talking during their swing. They're trying to make a living out there. And if they screw up a shot, they put a ball in the water, cost them two strokes. That could cost them, anywhere from $10,000 to $900,000, depending on where you are in the tournament. And those things can add up over the course of a season. So the players are thinking about their career, which I think is the appropriate thing for them to do. And the fan isn't thinking about that at all, that's heckling them. They're thinking about having fun or catching something on video that they could put on Instagram or whatever, or just have a laugh with their buddies. And that's where the headbutt happens, because the priorities are completely different. And I don't know how you convince someone who has that different priority to just kind of be a little bit more quiet for a couple seconds or stop talking when someone's about to swing. I don't know how you do that.
All right, let's get to the other story, which is LIV and the PGA, because Ron and I, when we remember in June, because we tried to get you on and you helped us explain it, there looked like there was this merger, and then it didn't happen. Was it too premature until all the I's were dotted and the T's were crossed? Or how are these two now, are they connected in any way now by any money or investment?
Not financially, no. I mean, the framework agreement that they announced on June 6th and signed May 30th, that is still in place, as far as I understand. They had a clause in that agreement. The agreement was supposed to expire December 31st of last year. They could mutually agree to extend that agreement so that they could have more time to negotiate a final deal. But the expectation is that that extension ends sometime in March or early April. So if they don't have something by the Masters, again, they could choose to extend it more, or they could decide we're not going to ever agree to an ultimate deal here and they go their own way. I think the investment from this group called Strategic Sports Group, which is headed by Fenway Sports Group, the folks who own the Red Sox, and a number of other North American major professional sports owners, on one hand could be a help toward an ultimate deal with the Saudis, because the Saudis also want to invest in other sports. So they would view that as an access opportunity, not only to golf, but the other four major professional sports in this country. But there are an increasing number of players who are vocal in public that have said, well, Strategic Sports Group just threw $3 billion at us at a valuation of $20 billion. And there are $12 billion, and there are people who are willing to invest at a valuation of $20 billion. Why do we need the Saudis to be involved at all from a financial perspective? The players who are vocal about that will also say, from a unification standpoint, unifying professional golf again, a deal with the Saudis could make sense. But if the Saudis demand that LIV Golf continues or gets integrated in the schedule in some way that most of the players don't want, they're going to torpedo the deal eventually. And if the Saudis aren't getting what they want, which is some valuation for this thing, LIV Golf, they've spent billions of dollars on for the last couple of years, well, then they're not going to do a deal either.
Ryan Ballingy, always good stuff. Always good talking to you. Thank you so much, and enjoy the tournament this weekend out in Los Angeles and the rest of the season. Hope to catch up with you soon, my man.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate it.
You got it. Ryan Ballingy, GolfNews.net. Great site if you want to follow the tours and the news that is coming out of the golf world. We'll continue. It is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.